When your life depends on it, when everything is on the line, you've got to get real about addiction treatment. Only Caron offers 65 years of medical expertise in evidence-based treatment with real, proven results. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Caron patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. So if you're ready for something real, visit caron.org/real today. Caron. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
We're back. Welcome everyone to Benzinga's Cannabis Hour. We're here.
Let's get started. So let's touch on some news though before that. Javier, I don't know what order you want to go in, but I think maybe hit on the obvious one first.
You got to start with Terrasen, right?
What a merger. Holy moly.
So TRSSF and GAEGF have merged. TerrAscend paid $545 million in stock for Gage Growth, one of the largest operators in the Michigan market, you know, just dominant in the state.
That is two cookies partnerships for this combined company, controlling the state of New Jersey and the cookies brand. And controlling the state of Michigan in the cookies brand creates a wonderful footprint for TerrAscend in Michigan. Jason Wild, in my opinion, nothing but positive vibes from me for this one.
Yeah.
I know some people like to poo-poo on big mergers sometimes. This is not one of those mergers that I think you poo-poo on. I think this is an incredible combination and two wonderful management teams. However they go with this, there's really no negative here in terms of leadership.
Yeah. Yeah, the other big acquisition, of course, this week was Hexo and Redcan, right? Hexo Corp, that's H-E-X-O.
Can I be honest? Seems big. I mean, what was it? Almost a billion?
Yeah,
925 million. That's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, are you fully positive on this? I mean, what are your thoughts, Javi?
I like it. I mean, I always like to see more and more consolidation, not because, you know, I'm for or against it, but you know, in terms of the market, right, and what it means for the market.
Like in comparison, people were not happy really overall with Canopy's acquisition of Supreme, and to me, Supreme had a bigger name in this industry than Redecan, and it was several hundred million dollars less of an acquisition. So.
Yeah. And here, you know, there's an issue, you know, a lot of people don't like the dilution that they're seeing, right? So what, you know, we want to see is if this generates actual cash.
Yeah. Webcoin asks, is Evio dead? You know what I've noticed, Webcoin, is that when you bring up a stock ticker that we haven't heard a lot lately, a lot of times they're so head down operationally that they forget to make announcements. They forget that PR is still important. Because you have to remember, this is still an emerging industry, a new market. And these cannabis stocks are still young and they're still getting grounding. And it takes a few years. And it takes a few years fighting uphill in snow both ways.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, also, you know, Evio, you know, being a pretty small company, right? It's a penny stock. So they're also, as you say, pretty focused on operate. And I think in operations and just, you know, building a business before making a bunch of announcements. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for Zynga Pro. Not, you know, honestly, nothing but SEC filings for a couple months.
Now, I want to call out a stock I'm very excited for, if you don't mind. I know you have, because while you have Pro up, actually, INCR. This is one of Israel's largest cannabis companies, Intercure, hops on the NASDAQ yesterday.
Yeah.
I am not, full clarity, I am already a shareholder, so no recommendations here. We don't really work with them on any level, so we're all good there. But InnerCure is a super cool company led by an incredibly cool person.
Well, I am not invested, so I can tell you a little bit about it. I spoke with the chairman of the company, Ehud Barak, who is also the former prime minister of Israel. So, you know, interesting leadership team for sure. InnerCure has very interesting partnerships as well with Tilray, with Organigram, with Cookies, with Charlotte's Web. Right, it's one of the largest vertically integrated medical cannabis operators in Israel. You know, so very, very interesting to see it, uplist to the NASDAQ.
Now, this was Candoc, right?
Yeah.
And now it's InnerCure. Just to clarify, because we had Michael Auerbach on from Subversive Capital, who is also invested in this company. Just to kind of call out that name change. Anyway, I just wanted to call this out, keep people aware of this, put this company on your watch list. I think this one will be a large international player when it's all said and done.
Do you want to do a quick fire round, maybe 1 minute, and then get our guests on?
We got a minute and a half. Go for it. What do we got, Avi?
Tumblr has launched a dedicated cannabis blog, and guess what? It's awesome. Go to cannabis.tumblr.com to find content, and partner with Civilized. And guess what? Guess who's also there? Benzinga. Guess who else is also there? No one else. So I don't know. That's pretty cool. You know, like whatever, like 40 million followers, 40 million active users is nothing. But,
Dude, so props to you and your team. The content you all create is incredible. I look at it daily. I read almost every cannabis article that comes out, and I'm a better and more educated investor for it. And you did not pay me to say that. Jason Raznick did. No, I'm just kidding.
I had this. Yeah. There you go.
Speaking of your content, can I just point out a Tilray article that you guys did recently? Sure. That was incredible. Kind of a bullish sentiment article. Got head to benzinga.com/cannabis, but I believe it came out yesterday. Why Tilray could be seeing a bullish trend right now. Check out benzinga.com/cannabis for that article. Sorry, Javi, back to you.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, just since we're directing people to benzinga.com/cannabis, there is one cannabis stock that has had better returns than Ford, Alibaba, Facebook, and Zynga over the past 5 years. Can you guess which one it is?
I read the article, though.
Okay.
I read the article, though.
So do you want to try a guess?
I mean, I know who it is. It's Canopy.
Yep.
I mean,
amazing performance. 472% up in the last 5 years versus 226 for Zynga, 200 for Facebook, 63 for Alibaba, and just 4% for Ford. Well,
and I called this out on Cannabis Daily today. FactSet released a little bit of a report on how Wall Street expects Canopy, by the time their fiscal year ends, which I believe is March or April of 2022, to have a per share profit, which I think is incredibly exciting. They're a huge company. Their BioSteel that they have a majority stake in just became the main drink of the Lakers. They're everywhere and you don't know.
Yeah.
Canopy is a huge company. You cannot forget about them.
You know, who else is everywhere? Urban Grow, that's UGRO on the NASDAQ. And today we have chairman and UGRO.
UGRO.
Yeah, Urban Grow.
You're right. Brad'll come on and be like, Elliot, what do you want, man?
CEO Bradley Natras as our guest. Brad, welcome to Benzinga Cannabis Hour.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
I'm just trying to throw a curveball. Make sure they're searching for you, UGRO, URGO. Yeah. Brad, it's good to have you, my friend. Yeah. Welcome back to the Benzinga stage. Tell us about you. What's going on at Urban Grow? Maybe a little bit of a recap on what you guys do.
Sure, you bet. Urban Grow today is an architectural engineering and cultivation design company that integrates equipment systems into controlled environment ag facilities globally. We uplisted to the NASDAQ in February of this year, and it was a game changer for the company. And so now we are able to execute on the vision, the strategic plan, and we have the funds to really realize our true potential.
So from the OTC, right?
Yeah, from the OTC. We're on the OTCQX for about a year and a half before uplisting to the NASDAQ.
And then to the NASDAQ. So I'd love for you to kind of, I mean, can you just paint a picture for us on how that opened some doors for you? And I'm really speaking more in relation to this industry, because I know a lot of people, a lot of investors that watch our show would not be in an OTC stock if it weren't for cannabis. So yeah, if you just go into that for us a little bit.
Yeah, you bet. You know, when we uplisted, we raised $62 million and enabled us to pay off all of our debt. When you're on the NASDAQ, it opens the doors for many different varying types of institutions and funds to invest in the company. When you're on the OTC, some are not able to do that. So it really opened the doors to a whole new range of investors. And you know, Urban Grows, we were born in the cannabis space, but we're crop agnostic. And so the fact that we uplisted, focused on cannabis globally, now focusing on also including food-focused vertical farming, really, really brought in a different subset of investor, for sure. Apart from that, you know, when you're executing an acquisition strategy, it's pretty attractive when you're talking to your targets, the fact that they could also be a part of something larger, bigger, rapidly growing. And so that's helped us as well on those discussions.
What do you think, you know, has been driving your stock performance recently? Like what do you think makes investors bullish?
We're delivering results. You know, during the uplisting process and during the roadshow, we laid out a strategic plan, and we're absolutely hitting that plan. You know, I'm excited right now, not because of the stock price, but because of the volume right now. If you look at the last 3 weeks, our daily volume is 400,000 share average.
Nice.
So that means, yeah, more eyes are on us. You know, I can't control the stock price. I can control delivering results, but the volume's great because that means we're doing something well, and people will now watch us and pay more attention to the story. So great development there. Thank you.
I mean, the operational focus, we hear from so many different executives here, and you know, I generally that's what you can control. And of course, you know, the belief from maybe, you know, to an extent, I should say, you can control what people do, but to the institutional accredited investors out there. But, you know, in terms of, you know, how that directly correlates with the volume, what do you do as a company to operationally, how do you plan that out? I mean, is it performance? Is it earnings? What's the most exciting thing for you? Does that question make sense? It made sense in my head before I said it.
it does. And we have a strong marketing team. We have a strong internal IR team. And it's those individuals that are helping to get our story out in front of more people in both of those sectors. It's Dan Droller, our EVP of IR, who is tirelessly talking to new funds, talking to banks, and really driving more attention to the company. So we're very strong internally. But the favorite part for me, of course, is the earnings calls, because that's when we're able to really release all of the exciting information into the public domain, and then to see them react. It's very, very fulfilling. It's a dream. It's an absolute dream.
Let's talk a little bit about M&A. You know, your recent acquisitions. I know you went for MJ12 Design Studio. Yep. You know, some others. So can you tell us a little bit about your recent acquisitions and how they fit into your long-term vision here?
Sure, you bet. So the long-term goal for Urban Grow is to deliver, to be the leading company globally delivering turnkey controlled environment egg facilities. So the client will bring the property or the building that they want to retrofit. If in the cannabis space, they'll bring their license. And then in one invoice and in over X amount of quarters, we will deliver a fully operational turnkey facility. Mm-hmm. We believe with this strategy and eventually getting pre-certified construction documents, we can get our clients to market 3, 4, 5 months quicker than they would if they took an alternative path. So to execute this strategic goal, I envisioned that we needed to acquire two to three accretive, service-focused, profitable businesses. You know, our niche is the service side. Yes, we're strong on selling equipment systems, but where we have found that we're separating ourselves from the competition and really becoming a leader in the space is in the architecture, the engineering, and the cultivation design. So the acquisition of 2WR and their subsidiary MJ12, it's a 23-person architect firm. We'd acquired an engineering firm about 2 years ago, but now with the acquisition of the architect firm that also has interior designers and on-site project management group, we have expanded our reach. We're now designing dispensaries, extraction facilities, processing kitchens. We are also engaging clients about 3 months earlier than we would before. And that's key. That's really key because you have a chance to utilize your expertise. UrbanGrow's strongest IP is our people. And we have a chance to engage our clients, earn their trust, earn their confidence, have them meet these individuals that have worked together on 450 facilities and really show a path to designing and completing a full high-performance cultivation facility.
You know, it gets impressive to me when I see new clients come on board for ancillary companies. But what's more impressive to me is broadening your relationship with your current clientele. And this seems like it would make it possible for you to do so, correct?
Yeah, Elliot, you're absolutely right. You know, our growth, our number one charge behind our organic growth right now is offering stronger services, stronger solutions to our current clients. So they bring us along as they expand, whether it's within the country or outside of the country as well. So the more talent we can bring in, the more ways to help our clients not have to worry about the environment and do what they do best, grow plants, grow profits, the more warmly we'll be received along the way. And so this 23-person architect firm brought with it over 70 active projects. And so those 70 active projects also get to benefit by the additional services and solutions that UrbanGrow had offered prior into their environment as well in their solution. So it's the cross-selling opportunities are phenomenal, and really increased service levels are what we're now delivering, even at a higher level.
That's super interesting. On the international front, you know, where are you beyond the U.S. and I assume Canada? Like, yeah. Where else are you operational right now?
So great question. I just returned a couple of days ago. I was on a 10-day trip over to the Netherlands and other parts of Europe, primarily Germany, for the International Cannabis Business Trade Show. Yeah. And you know, what I found in that marketplace right now, it is absolutely a blue ocean. It is a market where the U.S. was maybe 5 years ago. The trade show really reminded me of the early trade shows here in the U.S. When people would go to these shows because they were sort of they would whisper cannabis, you know. But at these shows, it's a place where everyone shares the same love for the plant and yeah, making a difference. And so what I learned there, you know, when there's speakers, and Lucas Targus, one of our VPs, had a chance to speak, there was hundreds of people packing the auditorium to listen to the speakers. And it's so early stage. There's a lot of people that we met at the trade show from a variety of countries that great ideas, they have facilities, they're ready to move on, and they're working on their financing at the same time. So Portugal's a strong market that's increasing for sure in the cannabis space, and it'll be really exciting in the coming months to see how the Netherlands builds out their facilities as well in this test program. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'll tell you, COVID, the European market really wasn't strong enough to carry that momentum, in my opinion, through the pandemic. And so the fact that we hadn't been over for a year, or a little bit more than a year, it hasn't set us back. That opportunity is really push pause. It's ready to go. We hired a vice president of horticulture, 10 years experience. He's based in the Netherlands. That will really help us gain momentum quickly. And we also opened an office, not an office yet, an entity Urban-Grow European Holdings in the Netherlands. So we're ready. Another empire to grow from.
That's awesome.
I got a follow-up question here. I understand, right, like why you would need Urban-Grow in, you know, or your services in the Netherlands or Germany. But, you know, most of the growing in Portugal is made, it's done outdoors. And, you know, I'm thinking maybe Colombia or Uruguay. Like, how does, do you like outdoor growers have a use for Urban-Grow and, you know, its services or?
So Colombia and Mexico, you know, outdoor grows overall. That's not our target. You know, our target is indoor, full controlled environment facilities. And in Europe, you know, there are some greenhouses, and we're working right now in Macedonia as well. But there's also a tremendous influx of indoor facilities. Switzerland is another example. So in Portugal, yes, there's greenhouse facilities being built, but there's also indoor as well, and that's our sweet spot.
Can I ask, maybe kind of shifting a little bit here to more of the domestic scene? In the next 5-10 years, whenever we see any type of legalization come down the road, not necessarily asking for your opinion on that, but you're welcome to weigh in terms of where that leads the hydroponics industry specifically and the ancillary side of those that help grow plants. Do you expect some of these facilities to that you're selling to right now to become a little moot? Or does that worry you? Are you planning for that? As these companies maybe redirect vertical integration to maybe a more broad scale?
So it's a complex question. My personal opinion is at least 3 years until legalization is the process even moving quickly along. So at least 3 years. The U.S. market's about 30% built out. In our opinion right now, built out with new facilities. There's a lot of new states coming on board, medicinal only, and then eventually they'll switch over to adult use. We have, there's from a commercial turnkey facility standpoint, still tremendous opportunities for the absolute foreseeable future. But we have 85 employees today. And these 85 employees, about 60 of them are architects, engineers, interior designers now. And we have horticulturists and plant scientists that have 5 to 25 years of growing experience. So what we're doing now is leveraging that expertise also post-facility startup. The plan is GrowCare. It's a managed services program. And we want to hold that client's hands from startup all the way through for the life of their grow, really, to be on site with ongoing training, maintenance support, audit, facility optimization. There's consistently more advanced equipment that comes out in the horticulture marketplace globally. We'll supply, we'll enhance those facilities so they can grow more, even more efficient. And then also ag tech and remote monitoring as well. So that's how we're looking forward. I believe for us, state rights is very important. And when a state opens up and they award a certain amount of licenses in that state, it stays within the state. When Canada legalized, they didn't have those provincial rights. And so there was a tremendous number of super grows that were built because they could move product all across the country. Mm-hmm. And so in the US, the state rights is very, very key and keeping it within that state as well.
Do you think that, I mean, can't predict the future. Nobody has a crystal ball. Everybody, you probably have a differing opinion than the next person that we have on, not necessarily Rob, just an expression. Just saying, like, do you feel states' rights is going to be the direction this country takes, at least at first?
I do, for at least the next decade. I sit on the board of the National Cannabis Roundtable. There's a lot of strong leaders in the cannabis space. So I have a chance to hear many different perspectives when I sit on the board and we have our monthly board meetings. And I feel that state rights is important or to many companies, whether it's ancillary or it is the cultivation companies themselves and the MSOs. But there's been a lot of effort. There's a lot of pioneering that's gone into this marketplace, a lot of blood, sweat, tears, and money. And that should be protected for the foreseeable future. And I believe also the states, until they find a way to capture their fair share on a national basis, the states who took that step forward earlier, they also deserve that that tax revenue as well, and the benefits that that brings its inhabitants.
Well said.
Got one last question, right? Sure. How do you, are there options to keep or make Indoor Grows environmentally friendly, right? Mm-hmm. And if so, what can be done so that the impact of indoor growing on the environment is not as big as it used to be?
Yeah, that's another great question. So there's two focuses for urban grow for the future in this area: energy and then water. From an energy standpoint, which is really the future also, figuring out energy reduction is key to the future of successful food-focused vertical farm as well. So energy usage, getting that under control from a water standpoint. So we currently, from a water treatment standpoint, which today in the country varies by state, by city, by county, we design wastewater treatment systems in some of the more aggressive restricted counties. That wastewater has to be captured, treated, and then reused. But that's only in a select few counties in the country. And so we design those systems. But I think that's the area. Maybe taking it to the next level in certain states or areas that are not requiring that, but taking it upon ourselves to be a value add of the urban grow solution. But definitely an area of focus for us. And we are bringing experts on. And we are looking at acquiring expertise through acquisitions that focus on those two areas.
Fantastic. Brad, any last words for the investors, the audience here? Anything you'd like to leave as a parting gift of knowledge to our audience?
Sure. We're in a great place right now. We're delivering results. We have been working hard on building our infrastructure internally. Processes, procedures, systems in which we can rapidly scale globally on a global basis. It's not just about the US anymore. The ambition is ripe for growth, both cannabis and then focused vertical farming. But we are focused on delivering results, continuing to deliver results, and make sure that we are a great vehicle that many people want to jump onto and have a fun, great, strong, profitable journey.
Amen. Love the new acquisition, my friend. Again, NASDAQ listed UGRO. It says Urban Grow. You can see them again at our conference, October 14th and 15th. Brad will be speaking there, I believe, on an ancillary-focused panel. So looking forward to it, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Great. Thanks, gentlemen. Really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you,
Brad. Awesome. I mean, the ancillary side is just so important to this space right now.
I love it, man. I always have. And honestly, it's really nice to see NASDAQ traded cannabis related companies.
Both I hear investors. The exhaustion in your voice just from the OTC.
No. I hear it. I am down with OTC markets. I really like them. Some stocks there. But I do also like to see, this process of a mainstreaming of cannabis, right? And the, of course, the added diligence that the NASDAQ requires, the added, disclosures and reporting that the NASDAQ requires, right? It adds this veil of seriousness to an industry that on occasion needs it, right?
Companies have to do more as a company to be on that. And I think it could be interesting for us to do a piece on who's preparing for that in the MSOs, the major companies on the OTC, just maybe as a content idea. I'm not sure if anybody would read it. I would, since I'm suggesting it. So you get one view from me. There you go, Javier, that was a killer interview, man. Do we have a few minutes for some news, or you want to jump right into Rob?
Yeah, we have some time for news.
Okay.
In Panama, Congress legalized medical cannabis by a unanimous vote of 40-0. This is the first Central American country to legalize and regulate medical cannabis. Huge step. What do you think?
Excited, man. I'm kind of in a wait and see with this one. It's not a huge market, so you know, I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of opinion. I'm seeing who can jump in the quickest, who can kind of control the market share of the market. It's not going to be a lot of companies. It will be a few. So past that, you know, maybe a Chiron. Maybe depends on how this rolls out. So yeah, maybe a Clever Leaves. I don't know. Maybe a Flora Growth. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Another, you know, on other policy news, we had some mixed news out of Texas, right? And in a strange turn of events, you know,
Texas
is loosening its policies regarding cannabis, but, you know, tightening its policies regarding abortion to a point that the U.S. president has called extreme and blatantly violating the constitutional right to abortion. Because they're offering a reward for people, you know, 10,000 people, $10,000 for people who report abortion providers. So it's a mixed bag in Texas, but we are seeing some advancement on the cannabis and hemp fronts.
Regardless of what you think about abortion, normally these two things are tied in a similar parallel trend. So looking at it from just strictly a financial point of view, I think it is an interesting comparison, and it's a very weird thing for them to go like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, but good for Texas on the cannabis front. Weird for Texas to, you know, encourage people to hunt others down. Whatever. I mean, that's a topic for another show. That's not Cannabis Hour. But you know, in terms of who rolls that Texas market, keep an eye on Fluent, y'all. Fluent Cannabis, CNTMF. Consortium already has activations there, and you know, they've been a pretty reliable stock, a pretty steady chart. So something like this, you know, depending on how they roll it out, could be a nice boost for them. Yeah,
indeed. What do you think of New York's decision? So the new governor already selected her pick for the chair of New York's Cannabis Control Board.
Awesome. She's doing the right thing. She's celebrated right now in the cannabis industry for the most part.
Right. She's a former Brooklyn assemblywoman. She's a Democrat. And she has quite a, you know, an interesting background. So it seems like you know, Governor Hochul. I don't know how you pronounce it.
I literally did the same thing on Cannabis Daily like 3 days ago. I was like, I don't know how to pronounce that, you guys. I'm sorry.
I've only seen it in writing.
Hochul. We'll get, you know what? We'll find an audio file. We'll get it for you by next week. But I think it was the right move. She needed something to boost her approval rating from the start in office and separate herself from Andrew Cuomo and his administration. This needs to be her administration. This was an easy grab. It was already in motion. I think it was a no-brainer, and it's already underway.
Yep. Going back to the stock market, we were just talking about HEXO about 20 minutes ago. That's HEXO. They acquired Redcan for $925 million. Well, guess what? They also acquired 48 North Cannabis for $50 million this week.
Love that. I was hesitant about Redican. I'm a big 48 North fan. I'm a fan of that. I'm still hesitant about, was it Redcan?
Yeah, sorry?
Were you saying I said it wrong? Redican?
No. I said it wrong. I was calling it Redcan the whole time.
Oh, I would imagine it's Redican, or they just have an extra letter just to fool people. But I'm still, I got to see the Redican thing play out. But 48 North, I am all on board for. They've been pretty strong in this industry for a long time.
Indeed. We have three more acquisitions. One out of Ayr Wellness. They bought Pennsylvania Natural Medicine for $80 million and announced an accelerated expiry of warrants. The Balance Company bought Citizen Stash for $54.3 million in stock. And Planet 13 will buy Harvest Health, like a license from Harvest Health, for $55 million,
you know,
opening the door to Florida.
Quick comparison there, because I know the U.S. is just a very much more dominant cannabis market than Canada. But just a very brief comparison. Planet 13 buys one license. No facilities, no operations. They buy a license from Harvest Health. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, Delta 9 in Canada purchases two retail facilities, dispensaries in Edmonton, Alberta for $2.3 million. Look at the difference in value.
I mean, yeah. One is, yeah. I mean, I get it. I get your point, but one is like a Florida license.
And it's no knock at Delta 9. I love Delta 9. But
oh, yeah, yeah. But I mean, the Canadian market is no longer the hot topic, right? Mm-hmm. Every time I post something on Twitter about Canadian companies, and I do it like five, six, seven times a day, I get a bunch of replies from the MSO gang. A bunch of people are extremely bearish on Canadian.
Now, I don't think you should go in and sell all your Canada stocks here. But, you know, do your research, do your due diligence. You know, I think there are some strong Canada players that will get into the U.S. market. They may be long plays. You know,
We're watching Tilray very closely, Cronos very closely, Canopy very closely.
Village Farms. You ever heard of them from me? I don't talk about them much. What are you talking about? Okay, let's answer one question real quick, Javi, and then get Rob on and maybe finish with a news item or two. Simon. Simon, you know what? Let's do yours first since it's already up there. Javier, I'll throw it to you, man.
Let me see what they did. 1933 Industries. That's TGIFF.
Thank God. Did they take that ticker from Weekend Unlimited?
I think they did. It's the same company, actually. Wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. I think Weekend Unlimited is still around, but I think they may have given stuff off. It was a long time ago, honestly. I haven't thought about Weekend Unlimited in a while. Completes delisting. All right. Hey, man, you're going to have to give us a little bit more context on that, Simon. 1933 is a cool Nevada operator. I like them. Relatively quiet on the growth front. So this could be very interesting for them and kind of out of the blue, and I'd be very interested to learn more. We got 1 minute. Let's bring Rob on here in a second. But DD, yeah. Holding the bag on SNDL, keep reading about them diluting shares, thinking about getting out. What do you think? Here's what I think. I don't think you should continue to look at SNDL as a meme stock. I think Sundial is now, they've rebounded negatively. They've come back to earth. They've grounded themselves. They've utilized that to raise money and exactly. Put that into Sunstream. Sunstream? Yep. Is that the investment vehicle? Where they've already invested in Indiva, Sunstream a leading Bank. Edible player in Canada. That's NDVAF. They've invested in somebody else really big. They bought one of the leading retailers in Canada. Sundial's here to stay. And their share price in the next year ideally will reflect that, but if it doesn't, you know, I think it's a solid investment, you know, or looking to be more of a solid investment than it was when people were buying it in February.
Are you up though? I mean, like how did you fare in Sundial?
So the first time I bought in, I obviously sold out and profited, took my profit, but I got back in and it went back up and I held, it came back down, still holding. But, you know, I think Zach and team have really done a pretty spectacular job.
I'm holding utilizing too, just a different kind of thing.
Say what?
I said I'm holding too, just a different kind of thing. Not stock.
Not just stock. Fair enough. All right, let's bring Rob over. I am super pumped to talk to Rob. Polaris Equity Group, the man himself, Mr. Sechrist, what's going on?
Hey, Elliot, good to see you. And Javier, nice to formally meet you. We do watch and track your articles and things you're doing too.
Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, we're glad to have you, Rob. Let's jump right in. We got some time here, but you know, for those that may not have heard from you before at one of our events, what does Polaris Equity Group do in the cannabis space?
We were the first dedicated lender to the cannabis space in 2016. We took our knowledge of doing 5,000 value-add transactions for building facilities across the nation and doing over $1 billion and applied it to this sector. And we became an exclusive lender to this sector. Since that time, we've now originated more than 56 transactions with nearly half of those already paying off. And we're the largest privately held fund dedicated to real estate in the sector. You know, it's been really exciting and fun. Traditionally, lending is kind of boring. And this has been really fun to watch our companies that we're lending to and building, watch them build out those new facilities to expand their operations. We just closed item 9 labs in 2 separate states concurrently, Arizona and Nevada. That's a 3-phased construction project. It's going to be enormous. And it just, it's so interesting to hear these guys' stories of being entrepreneurs. You've got people coming from the illegal market with experience moving to the legal market. From the operator standpoint, you've got real estate developers that couldn't find a cost basis that made sense to try to make profit and are ended up into the cannabis real estate industry. And you've got this confluence of some of the most mashed up different types of thought processes out there. And it's just really interesting because the cannabis sector as a community, whether they know each other or not, they all have had the same struggles, and we've had to share those struggles as well. We were kicked out of our bank, and we hold dozens and dozens of trust accounts and at the time, tens and tens of millions of dollars. And so that was problematic. And, we've gone through all those challenges and we've solved all those. And we're the first ones to do many things, and we'll be announcing several new things that we're the first for within the next 30 days. And we'll be sure to make sure your team is in front of that. But these are major game-changing items for a privately held company in the cannabis lending sector.
I don't know if you heard that, Javi, but I'm pretty sure he just promised you the exclusive.
Yeah. I'll take your word.
Stay in touch with Mateo team. They're the leading edge of everything for us. So
yes, we will. Now, you say you're the largest real estate investment fund in cannabis that's private. Why do you choose to remain private in a context where public markets are clearly hungry for cannabis REITs?
Sure. And that's a question we get every day. And it's a strategy we've really thought about a lot. And I'm happy, really happy you asked that question. This particular asset class, being in cannabis, which is considered a sin business from real estate perspective, is going to be less impacted from a real estate or economic downturn or market volatility that is not even related to those. And so why would we hitch ourselves to the public markets when we could just be plowing through and closing deals when our particular sector is the only one in the country that is still doing well? And that was proven during COVID, where we were probably the fastest growing private fund in the nation during COVID. We went almost 10x during that particular year in assets under management. So our strategy has been, how do we navigate and compete against publicly traded companies that are either in the space or will be emerging into the space and have that liquidity? And they have to dilute their investors for that, or they have to do some other forms of leverage or things like that. How do we compete with them? And that is our strategy from the get-go. And we could have gone public, just so you know, and we elected not to. We think that this strategy, our investors don't want share volatility. They want to know that we're completely remote from that, that we're not tied to the Fed lending, prime rate or anything. We are on our own silo of capital, a dedicated vehicle that is going to be here regardless of what happens. We believe that our dedicated fund in cannabis sector gives the ability for investors to have an a la carte investment to diversify their own portfolio that is essentially 100% non-cannabis. It was almost all impacted during COVID is the best example. And they realized, look, I need to do a reallocation to things that are less affected. Some other things might be cold storage, lab space, things like that. But even those are going to have some impact as opposed to cannabis. And I always start with, you got to start with the purchase, the retail. $75 on average is kind of the ticket size out there. And most people can afford $20 to $75 at some point, even in bad times. And so as long as you got the flow of money happening, that runs the whole industry across the board.
I'm going to get a t-shirt that says Rob Sechrist making individual investors drool since 2017. Everybody on this chat's like, Rob! Rob, come you on. Know,
ever since we were with Jason Wild and you at the Benzinga in Miami prior to COVID, when it was just happening without us knowing, you know, so much has happened and we've grown so much and we're really looking forward to being back there in February with you guys.
Amen. Looking forward to it too, man. Yeah. So let's dive into more of the Item 9 Labs deal, since that's kind of right on the tip of all of our tongues. We all looked at the news maybe a week ago.
And there's a public company.
And there's a public company in there, INLB. You know, props to them for hopping on board with a cool company. What was that like? What was the due diligence there? They're construction guys, so I'm sure that was probably an added benefit there. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Sure. So I can talk about that at a high level. Sure. We actually divide our company into two components. I run the investor relations and the fund and manage all that side and do most of the public speaking. And we have a dedicated origination side. But I'm happy to share at a high level on that particular transaction. So Perfect. That was a concurrent closing of a combined total of $19 million. I think that they were $13.5 and $5.5 million. And acquisition and build out. And the strategy there really was looking at what their needs were. And one of the properties didn't have the same collateral value as what we would normally need, but the other one had sufficient. So we were able to look at this as a transaction where we could look at it holistically, even though it was in two separate states. And that particular transaction, when we work with publicly traded companies, we work with Acreage as well, it gets a little bit more complicated. There is a lot, our legal review goes up a significant more. There's more elements that we have to be conscious of because of the entities and how they're reporting and things like that. And, you know, maybe when we speak in Benzinga in Miami, we could have somebody, one of our team members from origination, get more granular, because it's really interesting the nuances that are different when it's a publicly traded company as opposed to a private company and the different things that we can do. And some of the things we don't like to really talk too much about, but there's a lot of places that are stumbling blocks for traditional lending. And, you know, we went through those almost 5.5 years ago. And so we've built those third party supports, those things that where we can get through it. Just having the money doesn't get you there. You got to have the surety of closing. We have closed 100% of every single transaction we have ever put out terms on that we were issued loans on. And that's something to be said. We had one transaction that, the day after we closed, they got an offer for like 7x of what the purchase price was, and the borrower turned it down. And we're talking an enormous payday. And so what our team does is we look at solutions and we can think outside of the box, not only from the you know, our side of how to structure it, but in a couple of transactions, the borrower, we had to think of ways for them to team up and do things with people so that we could get them to the next level. Now, sometimes they may not be able or willing to go that direction because there might be a short on equity or net worth to get that transaction done, but we provide the solutions. It's up to them if they want to choose those. And that's what I think is, there's a couple of things that really make us unique. One, we're dedicated. We understand the space better than anybody else. Two is that we're a value-add lender with the experience of 5,000 transactions. We process the draws. We get the money flowing. These transactions do 10 to 15 times more revenue per month than a non-cannabis transaction. So every month you can close is saving you exponentially revenue out there and on the transaction. And plus our ability to look and structure deals that make sense for the borrower.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, Javi. Next. Okay, fine. I'm going to go. Rob, I'd love to understand what markets you guys are excited for, what markets are easy for you to work in, states specifically, and if any opening up really excite you guys.
Everybody asks us that. Our investors ask us that. Press people ask us that.
We are press.
But I'm just saying, and for us as a lender, it's different than being an operator. And I'm going to break it in a couple of different ways. We look at everything case by case and looking at it as risk and how to de-risk a transaction as much as possible and provide the most we can for the borrower concurrent at the same time. And so we don't look and say, hey, this state is probably the coolest state to be in. We're willing to look at any transaction in any of the states that's legal, or we're even willing to talk about states that are newly coming online. So we've got a structure and something ready to go for them. But everything is on a case-by-case basis. So it's not like we don't get to choose where our transactions are going to be. We get to choose which transactions we're going to do. So we don't say, hey, we're going to market in this state because we like the state. We need something there. We're looking at the bandwidth of all the transactions combined, picking the very, very most experienced operators, the best transactions, best sponsors, et cetera. On the other hand, from an operator standpoint, a limited license state like Florida, where it's vertically integrated, very expensive to enter. You might be into $200 million before you can even produce your first dollar. That's an enormous challenge for somebody to come in and be in that state, which is great if you're one of those people. If I'm the lender there and I need to replace that tenant, do you think somebody's going to come in and put $200 million out to capture that market share? Or do you think that one of the other operators is just going to expand capacity to take it? So it's a different optics for us in how we look at things than it is for an operator. We want to be able to replace tenants easily or as easily as possible. And we will adjust LTVs, we'll adjust loan structures to mitigate for these risks.
Now, I mean, I know you have a West Coast office in Southern California, you have a New York office, you're very focused on the US. Are you looking at international markets at all, considering funding operations abroad?
So,
or what's your view in the global markets, right, in general?
Yeah, we believe that our expertise could be applied anywhere in the world. We are considering to go to do some things in other countries at certain points. We've already had some of those discussions. Some of the challenges that you have is different types of laws, different types of collateral protection, title insurance. Yeah. There's some things that need to be solved, all which can be solved with, and we can do those solutions. But this particular market in the U.S., we've calculated to be about $50 billion once it's built out, mm-hmm. and that's using our proprietary database. We were the first to analyze it from a real estate perspective as opposed to an operator's perspective. This is an enormous market, and only maybe a couple billion has been put out so far. And so we're going to stay focused on our growth of the company and what we're doing here before we start going into ancillary markets and things like that. So we're aware of it. We have lots of things going on, but we're not planning a dedicated vehicle for international at this time.
Can we go back at that figure for a little second? You said you estimate a $50 billion market.
That's correct.
And that is for cannabis real estate, just that's cannabis. Like, can you elaborate on that? Like, how you come to this number, what it means?
So I will give you kind of a high level. Pretty much in any real estate market in the country, some hedge fund or some analytics company has spent millions of dollars analyzing that to have facts to make their decisions. Cannabis, there are none of that data existed. And as we continue to grow, we didn't have the facts we needed to have. And so we are a fact-based decision maker. We needed to know how many licenses are there of this type? What's the average square footage? What's the average price per square foot? What's the average build cost? What is the average equipment cost? And it's broken out and all that. So we analyze all that for each jurisdiction of each state. We built back that into some other indexes that we have for building costs and things like that. So we're tracking and know, is this an outlier transaction? Is there any secondary market trades happening? Has anything happened? What's going on with market rates? Nothing trades in cannabis. There are no secondary sales because these are really sticky tenants. Once they build it out, they're not going anywhere. They'll just buy another facility and build another one. And, you know, so you don't have that market data. The only way you can get it is you got to figure out a way to do it yourself. And we did that a couple years ago now. And that database is robust. And we finally had enough data points that we could roll that up into a dashboard. And now our data analytics team dedicated to just that, to crunching that data, is able to extrapolate. And we use that information to make our credit decisions.
It's similar to what Brad said. from Urban Grow saying 30% right now, only 30% of cannabis facilities are built at this point. That may seem honestly a bit high from what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah.
Fantastic, man. So I think we're coming to the end of the segment here. Any last thoughts on this market, you know, from the real estate perspective, what our investors can look for, you know, going forward?
So I'm less bullish on the near term of the legislation being deconflicted from federal policy. We're friends with Dana Rohrabacher, our local congressman that did Rohrabacher Blumenauer. We supported him since 2014. I just don't see if they were going to make a move. Well, first, I always tell people Biden would have said he would have rescinded the Cole memo, reinstated the Cole memo day one and signaled to the entire market. That didn't take any Congress. They didn't take anything. They didn't do it. So I told all of our peers that watch for that. If they don't do that, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the biggest tell. And I don't know why people kept thinking it's going somewhere else. The next biggest tell was the only way you can get past the 60 votes needed for the filibuster is to go with simple majority. And they could have done it with the infrastructure and they didn't. So now you're off to the midterms and it's not going to happen. So I know that that's not what people want to hear, but it's reality. And I also think that people get decriminalization confused with legalization.
Yeah.
Decriminalization is for an individual. And I think that there's broad public support on all markets for that and from everybody in the business. Legalization, be careful what you wish for if you're an operator. You know, there's some problematics. Boris has talked about it many times. And you know how it happens. I don't think there's ever going to be a national federal policy. I think it's going to be the states' rights. Where everything is compartmentalized. I don't see the Democratic states that were early adopters and going with the taxes, going and giving Republican states with lower tax base, lower OPEX and CAPEX bases to be able to import with the, you know, the intercommerce clause. It's just not going to happen. So I'm pretty confident in those things. I could be totally wrong, but I've been in politics and around it for a long, long time. Had lots of events here and with people, Cory Gardner and all the people who are writing these bills. And there's so much more machinations of smash-ups that are happening that have nothing to do with the policies that nobody ever knows at the retail level, which I consider most investors at. So I just don't see it. I think it's going to be pretty much status quo. I would like to see if I could see anything. I'd like to see that credit cards could be processed in the dispensaries so we can get off cash basis. And I'd like to see 280E reformed. Those two things alone move the market massively.
Super interesting. Yeah, super interesting view. I mean, especially in the legalization front, I think, you know, it's pretty unheard of. And not that other people are not saying it, just they're not saying it on our show. So
I appreciate it, honestly.
Yeah, I don't have investors that are going to lose their mind if I say that. So, you know, we're not as in, for us, if it does become federally deconflicted, it just means that we'll have more competition. We welcome the competition. We've been competing against lenders for 30 years. We have a 5-year head start on them. We're happy to have them join us here. There's plenty of room.
Amen, man. Rob, awesome. And Javier, do we have like a fun question or fact or something?
Indeed. I heard Rob is a car guy. I don't know if you know.
Car guy. What does that mean?
To do with cannabis. Actually, keep cars and cannabis separate. If you're high, don't drive. But Rob, assuming you won't be high when driving, what's that, you know, trip about?
What? I'm sorry. So ask the question again.
I know you're big on cars, and you'll probably be driving some very fast cars and some very famous in tracks. I think it's in Neuburg.
Yeah, so I'm headed to Germany for a couple of days on this Saturday to drive Spa, where they just did the Formula One race, GT3 for there, and then I'll train on the Nürburgring for a few days. Unfortunately, it looks like we've got rain for both days, and the Nürburgring is it's like driving around with a shotgun to your forehead in the rain, but you can do it. You just got to be careful.
Rob, it's like a mountain video, track, right? It's a mountain track.
The Nürburgring is 14 miles, 1,000 feet of elevation, but the most important thing is every turn is blind. So you don't know. I'm a pretty good driver. I've never even been off track, but event, you could come around a turn, there could be somebody spun out and you got to stop. And I might be able to stop, but the guy behind me might, you know, ding you up a little bit.
What car will you be driving?
So for Spa, I'll drive a GT3 Porsche. And for the Nürburgring, because there's a chance that car could get dinged up, I'll go down to an M4. You're never going to use the full amount of the car at Nürburgring. I don't care who you are.
You shouldn't. Yeah. Please don't.
Yeah, I want some pictures and video.
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram. I post some pictures up there, you know, some of the stuff that we do.
Fantastic, Rob. Hey, thanks for coming on, man. We'll see you soon. I think we have an event in New York that you guys might be at up in the next couple months. So looking forward to seeing you there, man.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And I was just joking about the shotgun. We're very safe helmets, and it's much safer to be on the track than on the freeway where nobody has any clue what they're doing.
Touche there. That we can all attest. Rob, thanks again, man.
No, take care, guys. Bye.
Be well. Awesome day of interviews. We had Urban Grow, NASDAQ listed UGRO, and we had Rob Sechrist from Polaris Equity Group. Just amazing lender in this space. Javier, killer interviews today. We covered a lot of news. D Nice, I do see your question about Sundial. We did answer another question very similarly asked between the interviews. So if you want to rewind, you can catch what at least I said there. And I think Javier, he may agree. He may not. Sometimes.
Yeah. I always do.
Yeah. So Javier, that's it for me, man. Always a pleasure. Anything else you want to leave our guests and audience?
Like, subscribe, go to benzinga.com/cannabis and follow us on social media, BZ Cannabis, on every major social network.
Love it. And y'all make sure to register bzcannabis.com. Almost every leading C-suite in the industry is going to be there. Y'all should too. We'll be streaming it right here on Benzinga YouTube. Until then, y'all.
See you next Tuesday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern for Cannabis Insider. Peace out.
Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say. It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, Geico makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
Karen is the proven expert in addiction treatment. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results, real care, real about recovery.